Jeff, welcome to another episode, another week. A fantastic feeling. I've just been riding cloud nine this entire week after what happened on Saturday night. And I don't know how long this podcast is going to go, this episode is going to go, because we could do like a 7-hour podcast talking about everything that's transpired in the last 7 days.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been
related to BYU.
It's been a big week. It has been, I wasn't alive in 1984 and I was one in 1990 when Ty won the Heisman, but those are the only 2 weeks in my head that I can think of that would even be close to the same magnitude that this past week has been for BYU. And what's so crazy is the Cougars snap a 12-year losing streak to their most hated rival. And that is absolutely the most secondary story of the week. Like, that's how big last week was.
Yeah. And I think it's something that it was very symbolic, right? Like, it was almost, and we kind of talked about this in our postgame fireside, right? Like, is this a launch point? And is this something that you can capitalize on and go off of it? And it didn't feel like it wasn't just ending the streak. It was celebrating the end of a legitimate 40 years in the wilderness of successful G5, whatever, non-power football, being outside of the club, looking in, and then knowing we finally got what we have deserved for 35 years and that we have been close, right? Like, it was, we were supposed to be in the Big 12 over Baylor. And then Ann Richards said, not on my watch. Otherwise we're blocking the Texas schools. And then the Pac-12 was close, or the Pac-10 was expanded. BYU was the number one target in the 90s. They ultimately chose not to expand. We, you know, Tom Homo and Brock Mendenhall in 2010, 2011, it sounded, and there were a lot of people in the building that thought that we were going to the Big 12 with TCU and that was going to be a package deal. They end up going for West Virginia, right? And then 2016, we are told we're number 11. There's a little debate over Cincinnati or Houston for number 12, but you are definitely number 11. And then because of Texas and Oklahoma, they ultimately decided not to expand back in 2016. Like, we have been so close for so long. And every time someone has looked into, should we add BYU? The answer has always been yes, but then something just kept it from happening. And now we are there.
On one hand, the biggest thing that I think to me that has come out that we haven't really discussed on this show or anywhere else is it is unequivocally known now that it was Texas and Oklahoma. Texas and Oklahoma did not want BYU. That's it. Everybody else was on board, but Texas and Oklahoma didn't want BYU.
Because they're scared.
Well, I mean, it could be the 6-1 record. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's they just didn't want to share more of the pot. Who knows, right? It could have been.
But even then, in 2016, they wouldn't have had to share more of the pot because they had the pro-rata clause, and then they negotiated that and said, "Well, you can take that out, but just give us more money now anyway."
Right.
They're like, "Pay us as if there were 12 of us, and just take in. We'll stay at 10." That's what they agreed to.
Right. So, for whatever reason, they didn't want BYU, but now we know that we can safely hate those schools, and it isn't just because they left the Big 12. Like, I've seen some debate, right? Like, I've seen people that are like, hey, no, I understand that the rest of the Big 12 hates the Longhorns, horns down on Texas. I understand why, you know, K-State would hate Texas and Oklahoma. But without Texas and Oklahoma leaving the SEC, BYU doesn't get in, so we should be thankful for Texas and Oklahoma. No, they're the reason that we have been in the wilderness for the last at least 5 years, potentially 10 years. I mean, for all we know, it was 2010, 2011, Texas and Oklahoma that said, hey, no, go get West Virginia, not BYU. We'll take TCU, fine, but go get West Virginia. For whatever reason, who knows why, it doesn't really matter at this point, but for whatever reason, they did not want BYU. So, Cougar fans, we can safely treat Texas and Oklahoma how we've always treated Michigan for the Bo Diddley Tech comments back in the 80s. Like, we can just safely have this silent, subtle grudge towards those schools for now until the end of time. And we can feel good about it.
And, you know, and just because, like, you can hate them, and still acknowledge that something good came out of their decision, right?
Yeah.
Like Satan is still a jerk, but he kind of played himself by getting Adam and Eve to eat the apple, right? Like he thought he was so high and mighty and won something, but really he was part of the plan the whole time.
Yeah, well.
So there's, you know, so sometimes jerks can do good things, or not good things, fortuitous things.
You know, have you looked at the agenda all the way through?
I did, and that is that's what planted that thought in the back of my mind.
This is not the first time, folks, that we're going to talk about Satan. Or no, this is not the last time that we're going to talk about Satan in this show. It's going to happen.
It is. Yeah.
But before we do, okay, we've been told that during football season, we might need to trim our rambling about nothing down. And while on one hand, I love our rambling about nothing, and I feel like that's what makes us, I can also understand that, yeah, we probably talked for like 40 minutes last episode before we got into anything sports related. So we're not going to go that crazy, but we are still us. And like I told you last week, Garrett, for whatever reason, street poopers and things like that have just kind of become part of the fabric of this show. You weren't really happy to hear about it, but that's just sort of organically what's happened. And it's 100% my fault. And I will take all the responsibility, but that's who we are.
This one is funny, though. And it has nothing to do with pooping. It's more so the punny name is what makes this great.
Well, I mean, it has a lot to do with pooping. There's a big problem with cow poop across the world, a huge problem. Some say that it is the number one contributing factor to global warming. Like there's just cow poo everywhere. Releasing gases. It's a big deal. And even for farmers, as you guys know, I am the product of multiple dairy farmers. My mom came from a dairy farm. My dad came from a dairy farm. I was born in Logan. I've got dairy farm blood coursing through my veins. There's a lot of cow poop at those dairy farms. A ton. My mom's side of the family, I think they have, I think they milk like 600 head now, 700 head of cattle every day. So they've got a pretty decent sized dairy farm in Lewiston, Utah, up in Cache Valley. There's a lot of crap. Like they spend a lot of time with it. And these cows, as I spent time in the barn, these cows just poop everywhere. Like, I don't know how many people have paid attention to cow poop, but they lift their tail up and it goes. It's like at a parade, a horse. They're just walking down the road and they could just be walking mid stride, poop. I was out watching the Anaki wild horses a couple of weeks ago. And as they're stampeding, they would poop while they were stampeding. So it's wild. Like they could just go anywhere. According to science, now I don't know who, but scientists, cows can be potty trained easier than toddlers can. In this small little test group, 16 cows were tested, and 11 of them learned how to use the moo-loo. Yes, the moo-loo. What a name. I don't have any need for a moo-loo, but I think we should all have one because that's a great name. But 11 out of 16 cows were potty trained. Now, normally when I find these random articles, it's like obscure news sites from like some local county news in the middle of nowhere. This was a big enough story that the AP picked it up. This is a big deal. Cows can now be potty trained. And in light of the Utah State game coming up, this is why I feel like we can talk about this one today, Garrett, because as we all know, Utah State fans and dairy farms, hand in hand. It is like
they're lamb synonymous.
It is like lamb and tuna fish. Like it is a big deal. Those two are together forever. That's a big daddy joke. If you guys don't know that, you're looking at me like
I was like lamb and tuna fish. Like yeah. I was like, oh, you said lamb, and I thought you was like you're gonna say oh like lamb and mint jelly. I was like that's an obscure reference, but those do go together.
No. Lamb and tuna fish. Big daddy, you're a little bit younger than me, not much, but just younger enough.
I haven't seen that movie in so long.
Yeah. Just young enough that Big Daddy wouldn't have been a part of like your early teenage years of, you know, you have a sleepover with your friends and you watch Big Daddy. But it's peanut butter and jelly, man. Aggie fans and cows, it's just part of who they are. Don't get mad, Aggie fans. I get it. I came from you. I was born like a mile away from whatever it's called now, Maverick Stadium. I know exactly who you are and your dairy farmers. My uncle is one of the biggest Utah State fans that I know. And I think he's now, I think he just got promoted, or he's going to be promoted. It's like been announced, but not formalized, that he's the CEO of the Farmers Association of America. Like, it's not just a stupid joke that Boney Fuller makes. Like, farmers and Aggie fans, that's who they are. And so if the Aggie fans don't find a way to make the first major NIL deal at Utah State, somehow the Mulu, if I don't see Aggie players sponsoring the Mulu and shouting it out on their Instagram feeds about how, hey, why don't worry about, you know, stepping in cow pies anymore because the Mulu exists. If I don't see Cooper Laga say something like that on his Instagram, I'm going to be really disappointed in Utah State. This is the perfect opportunity for them to take advantage of NIL deals everywhere, like to blow it all out of the water, make a bunch of money for their players, help their fans learn about something that's happening apparently in New Zealand right now. It just feels important.
I think the fact that it's the Mulu, like, it's just such a fitting name. And I like how you segued this into NLI, because there is another announcement on top of the Built Bar, the crypto exchange FTX has signed in a group through Ohana X. There's a lot of X's in there. Through Ohana X, which is the main agency that most BYU athletes are using to represent them. Carl Sokia is a great dude. You and I have talked to him because obviously he handled our deal with Lorenzo Fauatea and Isaac Rex. And we are working on deals with Mason Wake to get him a shirt up as well. And they signed a new one, and it's all this crypto agents, this crypto exchange is going to be giving $500 to to 110 players on the BYU football team, which is awesome.
Which is cool.
I mean, it's what, so Built Bar is covering tuition, you know, now it's like, that's about enough to cover books. If you play your cards right and know how to, which classes to take and buy used books, like, you can get by with $250 a semester for books. So now pretty much every player on the team has tuition and books covered some way or another.
I did laugh. There was the video that BYU put out a week or two ago when the Built Bar checks came in and they were handing them out. And so the scholarship players, you know, they got their check and it was like, hey, I got to go cop a new pair of shoes, which is great. But I did see a handful of walk-ons that they got their checks and like, oh yeah, I got to go get those Jordans now. I mean, that's fine. Like, clearly they had money to pay for tuition before the Built Bar stuff. So it's just a reallocation of money, but it was a little bit humorous to me to be like, oh, scholarship money, Jordans, here I come.
Yeah. Well, even if you, I mean, there's guys, right? Like, I know, like, they interviewed Talmadge Gunther, right? And brought it up. That, you know, interviewed him because he's one of the first people. It's like, he's married. So because he's married, he's automatically qualifying for a Pell Grant. And what do you know? BYU's tuition is right around the amount of money that the government will give you in a Pell Grant every year. Like, that's kind of what they peg it to, is like, between your taxes and your tithing, if you're a married student, your tuition is 100% subsidized, right, at BYU. And so a lot of them, it's like, you know, even this is still all gravy on top, and it's awesome.
I mean, this is another tangent, but why is there not some sort of, like, in all of this talk about student loan forgiveness, why has there not been some proposal that is exactly what you just said? Like, why are state-owned tuition or state-owned universities, why is tuition not tied somehow to the full cost of a Pell Grant?
Because they still want to make money. And all of higher education is a scam, and that's
it's a fraud.
Why there need to be more looking at income share agreements, and we can, that's a whole off-season topic for us of getting into why Lambda School and similar, which was started by BYU grad and similar, is the future. But Google income share agreements, basically, hard, you know, these schools, they got multi, you know, they got a $500 million BYU's endowment is like $1.8 billion or whatever. It's like, surely they can underwrite some student loans themselves. It's really cool. And I don't think this is going to be the last NIL deal, right? Like, I don't know. And something I've thought about, and we kind of talked about this a couple of weeks ago when the Built Bar deal was announced, that they're, you know, not being in a conference allowed possibly allowed that to happen. So I don't know. I wonder what's going to happen to that moving to the Big 12 and what the Big 12 has in place for, you know, in terms of conference, you know, those types of NIL deals, if that is something it's going to have to end or will be changed, or the conference going to say, hey, you know, is the league going to say, hey, everyone go out and try to find doing this. Like, you should be trying to build, like saying, hey, that's a good thing that they did that. And don't be a quitter and get mad that someone else pulled off what you couldn't. Go out and try to find a business to do this for you. Like, that would be the right decision. Or are they going to say, like,
it would.
Oh, you know, right. Cause like, even here you're hearing about like the Pac-12, right. Is the reports are that the ADs in the Pac-12 are going to oppose the expanded playoff, which even in the expanded playoff, your conference champion should, even if they're not the highest ranked, you know, champion, they should still be in the top 12, right? If they're not one of the top six champions, which means like by you opposing that Pac-12, what you're really saying is we don't think we're always going to be one of the top six conference champions. And so we won't do this unless we have a guaranteed bid. But it's like, dude, the AAC just got kneecapped. And as soon as Boise leaves the Mountain West, they're nothing either. Like, there's really only six conferences left. So I would hope that the Big 12 just says, no, BYU did a good thing. You go find boosters and do that yourself. Like, why?
I think as long as, and I love what this is an emphasis of Kalani. I love what BYU has done. As long as they are getting money for the whole team, if they were just like trying to capitalize and you know, the quarterback is the only one making money, Jaren Hall could go get his own deal. But these BYU sponsored things, it's paying everybody on that roster. I don't think that anybody's going to say no. I really don't. Now, I could see the NCAA putting some parameters in the next 2 years, but if I'm BYU, these guys just want to get paid.
Flirt in that gray area as long as you can.
Absolutely. And everybody wants to get paid. That's it. If you have got paid, you're in the business, in the market for a new house, what are rates at right now?
So basically, once you factor in the cost of, you know, and maybe not even buying a new house, you're just looking, like, now is a good time to do a cash out refi. Like, if you have a bunch of equity pent up and you can refi into a 30-year mortgage, go get that money working for you somewhere else. Like, your primary home is not an investment, because unless you downsize or you move to somewhere that has a cheaper cost of living, you're never going to realize any equity gain. So get that money out of your house. You can go get it working somewhere else. Basically, if your interest rate, if you're looking for a home, come talk to me. I work with Jeff Johnston over at Evolve Mortgage. He's a huge BYU fan, supporter of the show. I work with him doing mortgages. And so come talk to me and Jeff, and we'll see what we can do. Or if you are looking, considering refining right now, basically with closing costs and everything, if your rate is above about 3.5%, probably will most likely make sense in your case to take cash out, lock in a lower rate, get that money out for 30 years and stick it. If you have $250,000 of equity in your house, it's going to be better, especially with what inflation has been doing for the last year. And it doesn't look like it's going to stop, to throw that in the stock market and get it, or buy a rental property. Or if you have a business you want to start, you know, you can access that equity now. And, or even just say, if you don't want to do that, but you just want to save some money, you can just cut down on interest rates. So if you're over about 3.5% right now, it makes sense to at least get a quote. So reach out to me or Jeff with a G, and not to be confused. Well,
we say that kindly. Utah fans say Jeff with a G, and there's a negative connotation to it, but Jeff with a G, that's a professional Jeff.
Yes.
I'm here talking about the Mulu. Jeff with a G is talking about real business.
Jeff with a J. Real life. Works at a bank in Ogden. Yeah. Jeff with a G is a branch manager in Phoenix, right? Like, it's, you know, there's just a different level of sophistication.
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. And,
yes. And so come talk to me and we'll just see what we can do. I mean, it doesn't cost you anything to at least kick the tires, or if you are younger and looking to buy your first house, we can, we can help you with that too.
You know, what you just said about inflation, did you see that the Fed, they're trying to not move rates now. So it's always been, they don't want to move rates until 2022. The Fed is now trying to make us all believe that inflation is not real, and it's going to be 2023 that they'll finally move rates. So get comfortable with inflation, folks. It's coming.
it's
even more so.
Well, and it's been like 5%, you know, for the last couple of months, and they're still trying to say it's nothing, right?
Yeah,
like
they're trying. What did I read today? That rent nationally is up like 14%,
but they're trying to say, you know, we saved 16 cents on our 4th of July cookout.
That had to be the most, what's like, obtuse thing that has come out of the White House. Anyway, we're going where we shouldn't go. Let's talk about the Utes for a minute. I want to put a final bow on Utah, because here's the thing. BYU beat Utah, and it's time to move on. That's one thing we've never been able to do as a collective fan base, is move on from Utah. But right now, we have momentum on our side. BYU is going to a Power 5 conference. They will be in that Power 5 conference the next time they play Utah. The next time the Holy War happens, the Cougars will have a Big 12 patch on their jerseys. Like, let that sink in, folks. Like, that's what's going to happen. So the independent era of the rivalry is dead. It's gone. It's over. BYU won the last battle. They lost a lot of battles before that, but they won this last battle. And now the only time we have to think about Utah is when we meet up on the basketball court, and nobody really cares. Like, with all due respect to our basketball fans, that's not the Holy War. That's just BYU versus Utah.
That's basketball. Like the, I'm trying, what's another word for holy? That's like less than that. That's the, like something battle. Like, it's not a war. It's a battle.
Yeah. So the Holy War, as we've known it for the last 10 years, is done. So it's time to move on a little bit. BYU won. Utah, they suck. And I think they might suck. I was really high on Utah this year. They brought everybody back. I thought that they had a lot of talent. If they would have lost a lot of their seniors, guys like Nick Ford, Devin Lloyd, if they would have not have taken advantage of the COVID year and come back, these are guys that are drafted last year for sure. And I thought all of those guys coming back, Charlie Brewer doesn't have to be good. He just has to be serviceable. And if they can do that, that this is a team that can make some damage. That was my thought process. After watching them play against Weber, I gave them the benefit of the doubt, because Witt always sucks against FCS teams. They never look good. They always win, but they never look great.
Yeah, I gave them the benefit
of the doubt. Yeah. Gave them the benefit of the doubt. But after seeing them play against BYU, it's one of two things. Either one, they were so disinterested in that game, which is just so anti Kyle Whittingham. Like, they love that game way more than anybody on the Hill wants to admit. So it can't be that option. So it has to be number two. They must just kind of suck. And we're going to see against San Diego State, which warms the cockles of my heart, that it is San Diego State who is somehow going to be the barometer for whether Utah is a good team or not. That makes me just super happy. We'll find out how good Utah is. And so I want to put a bow on Utah on this round of the rivalry war, but there is a couple of things we have to talk about first. One, this was on Cougar Board this afternoon, I don't know, sometime. And the Utah Fans podcast, which I don't know what it is.
I've never heard of this.
Never heard of it. Some guy in a backwards hat, and not like a modern day backwards hat. Like, I'm watching King of Queens right now with my wife, and we're talking
the most underrated sitcom of all time.
It is. Well, and watching it back now, I know why it's not syndicated as much as other shows. There's a lot of jokes that wouldn't fly in today's political climate.
And that's why it's the most underrated. I will have to send you the funny, I'll post it on the Discord, the funniest sitcom clip that I laugh all time is when there's a scene where Arthur and Deacon go out to dinner together, and it is hilarious, and I will have to post that. But go on, sorry.
And so this podcast, the guys who were on it, there's two guys and a girl. And I'm sure they're fine people. But one of them is wearing a backwards hat a la Doug Heffernan. So we're talking like 2002, like Tiger Woods Nike hat backwards. Like,
it's not looking good. It's not a you know, flat brim trucker hat that's in style.
No, it's something else. They also apparently have this gimmick in their show. It's a YouTube show. They simulcast it on YouTube where, and I watched it two or three times trying to figure out how this like plays into the show, but they have a statue of, I believe, what is a penis. And it whenever.
Yes, it was like a golden
phallic
something or other.
And when they erected that, that was their joke, is it was like, if you were being a dick, they erected a penis statue for you, and it was supposed to be all, you know, punny. But I, you know, and I'm fine with the dirty joke. Like, I don't have any issues, but that wasn't funny. It wasn't a funny dirty joke. But anyway, they went on to say that Kalani Sitake looked like a moron on the sidelines. A moron. That was the word they used on multiple occasions, like four or five times, because he was jumping around and celebrating with his team once the game was locked up. And they said, you know, act like you've been there before. Okay, well, first of all, Kalani hadn't been there before. He's never beaten his mentor. He did. So that's one thing. Two, I don't give one shit what anybody from Utah has to say about Kalani Sitake. Not one. This is a man who is doing it his way. And that is what makes a coach a good coach. If Kalani wanted to just act like some hard ass, like, you know, if he wanted to just be Nick Saban, nobody would buy it. His team wouldn't listen. His team wouldn't subscribe. Like, anytime he did it, it would be so clearly fake that they couldn't do it.
Right.
And so he has to be Kalani. And Kalani isn't the guy who's just going to be stoic on the sideline. That's not who he is.
And that's not what we want. Like, we had Bronco for 11 years, 12 years. I don't remember how many exact number of years it was. And like, fans are excited, right? Like, people, I don't know a lot of people that said that they knew they were going to win when there was that video of Kalani running up into the student section, going into the stadium, and like seeing how excited he was. Like, that is what BYU fans want. And that is what we love. And even on, I don't know if you watched the Kalani Sitake show last night. He was like, he said, you know, he was a fan first. He grew up going to BYU games. He was happy that, like, BYU was his dream school. He got to play at BYU. Now he gets to be the head coach at BYU. He is living his dream. And he was like, I hope you're okay with me being a fan first. And I think that's awesome. And we need more of that, because sometimes coaches are too stuffy, right? Like, you have guys, like, sometimes, like, the rah-rah guys in college football, like the PJ Fleck, right? Like, PJ Fleck was all, oh, row the boat at Western Michigan. First school that called him up, he dipped on Western. He didn't care about Western Michigan. That was his shtick, and he's in Minnesota, and now who knows, maybe USC will call him up. I don't, like, right? Like, it's if a bigger name comes and calls,
he'll go.
He'll go.
And he's still trying to do the same row the boat shtick at Minnesota.
Right, but it kind of loses its flair a little bit when you know it's like, absolutely, oh, this isn't, you know, something that was really, but it's like Kalani is 100% all in. And that
I just think it's
palpable and awesome as a fan. And like, sorry, if your coach can't have fun, like, who cares? Like,
I don't. If your coach can't be who they are, right? Like, Bill Belichick, I have no doubt in my mind that when Bill Belichick is at home eating dinner with his family, he's the same guy that he is on the sideline. He is being who he is, which is great. Wonderful. Pete Carroll is the only guy who has made USC worth anything over the course of the last 30 years. And he's a fun loving guy. He jumps around. He's always chewing gum. He's never yelling at his players. Like, he acts a lot closer to Kalani Sitake, but what he really acts like is Pete Carroll. Like, he is himself. It works for Bronco, right? Like, Bronco is who Bronco is. And while this, you know, while it kind of grew, I don't know, boring, I guess, or whatever in Provo, he is who he is. And as long as you're being true to yourself, that's what a coach should do. That's how you connect with your team. Right. Kyle Whittingham is who he is. Like, yes, he's not jumping around on the sidelines and having fun. He also doesn't have fun when he goes home and, you know, goes to movies with his family. I think he breaks down the movie. I think he's more, you know, concerned about.
He's like
about
John Gruden, right?
Yeah, like I think he's more concerned about, like, did they take the most efficient path to get to the movie theater? Like, he just doesn't seem like he's the kind of guy who's going to have fun anywhere. But that's okay. I'm that kind of guy. Like, I don't want to go out and be with the people. I want to be a homebody. I don't want to get to know my neighbors. Like, people can be happy being who they are. And Kalani is a happy guy.
And I think part of this too is that most Utah fans do not remember and were not fans of Utah at a time when Whittingham, or they were too young. Like, maybe they were in like fourth grade when in 2004, and they, you know, they don't remember Urban being on the sideline. So it's all they've ever known is Kyle Whittingham as the head coach. And so to them, that's what a successful head coach does. And we have witnessed, as you and I have gone, because we have access to every single team's board on 24/7. We've kind of read through some of the comments, and, you know, these dweebs on this podcast, that they are not the only ones who are kind of having this identity crisis and in denial about things, but it is apparent. I think that, you know, we've talked about how, like, before, how most BYU fans, like, they're BYU fans, not college football fans. And it's just different. Like, if you go, like, when you went to your game, you went to the game at Ohio State, and when you're in the shoe, like, they're asking about SEC scores and they're talking about other random games. And they're like, they're curious about the sport at large, and as well as their own team. I think most Utah fans religiously follow the Pac-12, but they are completely oblivious to, like, the what, like, they know the SEC is good because it's the SEC, but I think they are kind of oblivious to the national media, like the national perception of the Pac-12 and how the rest of the country views the West Coast West Coast football.
I'm going to add one little caveat to that. I think you're 98% right.
That's an A+, so I'm okay with that. You can correct me all you want. If I get the 98, I'm happy.
I don't think that they religiously follow the Pac-12. I think that they religiously defend the Pac-12, but I don't think that Pac-12 schools really know that, like, Pac-12 school fan bases, whatever, don't really know that much about other Pac-12 schools. Like, as we are learning about Arizona State this week and following their boards, it's pretty clear to me that they don't know anything about Utah. They know what Utah is traditionally and historically, but they don't know anything about Utah this year. And I think you could make the same argument for Utah about the rest of the Pac-12. They know Oregon is good because they love the Ducks, because that's really, if you're not a Duck fan, can you be a Pac-12 fan? Like, that's the only
everything
hope
is
have
riding
on
them
state.
This year.
Yeah, but I don't think that they know much about even USC, and I know they don't know very much about, say, Washington State. Like, they don't. But yeah, you're right about this identity crisis, man. Like, it's bad. I mean, think about it. A lot of these fans that really jumped on the ship in 2008, they've never lived in a world where you're not talking about Utah. You're talking about BYU. It's really interesting. And here's my question that I have for you as we put a bow on Utah. Let's say they lose to San Diego State this week. I don't think they will, but who knows? I hope they don't, because that kind of, I don't know. Maybe I hope they do. I don't know what I hope for.
I don't think it doesn't. We are already in the rankings and the perception built off of that. We have the benefit of last year where it was like, we keep winning.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, last year wasn't a fluke. Kalani Sitake has something good. And honestly, now there is the, oh, there are, even though we are not in the Big 12, there are still the,
yeah, you're right.
It's, there's a little bit of a, you know, a nudge of like, oh, like the perception is different than it was going, you know, 2014, 2015, 2016. Right. Yep. And so I don't,
I think you're right.
If Utah keeps losing, it will not matter. As long as we take care of business, no one's going to look and be like, oh, well, that you voting against Utah didn't really mean anything. Like, no one's going to say that. So let's go 1-11 Utes. I'm here for it.
So let's say they lose to San Diego State this week. Rice-Eccles Stadium holds 45,807 people, according to the Google machine. How many people are at their next game against Washington State if Utah is 1-2 going into that game? Keep in mind, before you answer, up until now, up until this year, Utah has not lost a non-conference game in like 6 years. and they always play their three non-conference games first 3 weeks of the season. It's been a long time since they have not been 3-0 going into their first conference game. So if they go in and it is 1-2, how many of their 45,807 seats actually have butts in them in 2 weeks?
I don't know. Cause even did they limit attendance last year? Because even, or the year before, was it 2019? There was a couple games. I remember like Jody Genesee, like posting pictures, and when he was there covering them, and it was like, there's only 10,000 people here. It looked like the Salt Lake Stallions were playing.
I would be willing to bet that there's more than 10,000 empty seats. I would say 35,000 would be my guess.
Would be for attendance.
Yeah.
Well, because was that 45,000? Is that 45,000? Is that including the new addition, or is that to go?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. Because
I think they added another 5,000.
Oh, you're right. Okay. So it will be increased from, I got to read all the words. It will be increased from 45,807 to 51,444. I still stick with 35,000. And why do I think that? Because that is consistent with the rest of the Pac-12.
Yep. Did you see the picture of the USC game?
Yeah, that was bad.
There were maybe 5,000 people in the Coliseum.
Yeah, that was bad. I legitimately saw UCLA their first week, and I thought that they must still have COVID restrictions.
Yeah.
Because there was nobody there.
So I know you're not a big rugby guy, but I follow Major League Rugby, and there's a team in LA, and they also play at the Coliseum. This was their very first season ever. They were getting more fans to games than USC was, which should never, ever, ever happen.
Ever. Well, this is something that it's not on our agenda. I had a discussion earlier this week. There's a lot of assumptions. Clay Helton's gone at USC, that USC is still a top five job.
I
don't think so. And
I think
here's why.
The uphill battle combined with the booster pressure and the expectation to be a top 10 team every year. It's like the Texas job. Right. I don't think Texas is right. Texas has not been back. They've struggled for a decade. It's going to be a multi-year rebuilding process with boosters that will not give you multiple years.
But the one thing that Texas has and will always have is crazy fan support. USC doesn't get that.
No, LA fans are
fickle. And now USC with Reggie Bush, Matt Leiner, during the heyday, they were the football show in LA. But now there's two NFL teams in LA. There's more than one way to get your football
and
fixed.
That's
in Los
SoFi
Angeles
Stadium
now.
Is really, really nice.
Yeah.
And I would the Coliseum could kind of use a facelift.
I kind of wonder if the USC job and they don't pay quite like what people think they do. They talk a big game, but there's a reason that Clay Helton has been on the hot seat for 3 years. They didn't want to pay his buyout.
Oh, that's because they had multiple other lawsuits going on.
All kinds of things happening. But if that were at Texas, you can bet that there would have been some booster who ponied up the money to get rid of him.
Texas would prioritize buying out Tom Herman's contract over paying out settlements of the team doctor sexually assaulting every female athlete, which is what USC was dealing with, right?
Right. And so all of that is to say, I wonder if USC is even a top five job. I kind of wonder if it's a top 10 job. It's a top 10 job in terms of talent, no doubt. But I don't know that it's top 10 job in terms of can you succeed there as a coach anymore. And if that's the case, man, Pac-12, I don't want to be the Pac-12 going forward. I just don't.
We talked about this. I kind of was semi-facetious about it, but after seeing that picture of the USC game and how lightly attended it was, I honestly think there's a timeline where Arizona and Arizona State come to the Big 12 and say, hey, y'all want any more Mountain Time Zone inventory?
I agree. I completely agree. So let's put a bow on Utah, and let's do it as a collective fan base, not just this show. It's time to move on from Utah. Let's continue forward with our crusade towards a Pac-12 South championship. This week with Arizona State, Jaden Daniels. What is your opinion on Jaden Daniels? I have a pretty high opinion of Jaden Daniels. There are a lot of people who have a low opinion of Jaden Daniels. What is Garrett's opinion of Jaden Daniels?
Jaden Daniels is hit or miss. Jaden Daniels was, the perception of Jaden Daniels is built on his freshman season when he threw, started game one as a true freshman. He was a high recruit, started game one as a true freshman, threw for 2,900 yards, 17 touchdowns against two interceptions, and ran for 350 more yards and a couple scores, right? You saw that as a true freshman and thought, hot damn, this kid is going to be incredible. He was just okay. Didn't really improve in their shortened four-game season last year.
They had a weird year last year.
They had like a weird year.
More weird than most.
Right. And they also only had, like, they did not look great in their two games this year. And right. They've played right. SUU and UNLV. I get the week one. You know, you haven't played in a while. Week one's always kind of weird. There's usually those, you know, there's always weird close games, right? In week one, especially against FCS schools where you kind of, they hang around where they shouldn't. But then when they played UNLV, who is basically an FCS program at this point and still struggled, then it doesn't seem like Jaden Daniels has taken the step. And so it is, to me, Jaden Daniels is full of unrealized potential, and I don't know when that is going to be realized. And I think part of it is, right, they are without a wide receivers coach and a tight end coach because of their ongoing investigation by the NCAA. So what, their quarterback coach by himself, because Herm Edwards is a defensive guy. So what, they have their quarterback coach and their running backs coach. And the running backs coach was actually, you know, he was Gunnar Romney's and Jacob Conover's coach at Chandler High School and is now coaching at ASU. But
does Zach Hill coach the quarterbacks there? Because he's their offensive coordinator.
I think, let me see, coaching staff.
I should know that. But
the, and so you're right. Like you have what you have to do, defensive coordinator. Yep. He coaches the Zach Hill is the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. So Zach Hill,
for those of you who aren't just familiar with Zach Hill, he's from Boise State. I think he went to Arizona State last year, was maybe his first year, maybe 2019. But so he was Boise, you know, when BYU was playing Boise, like he's familiar with BYU. From like 2016 to 2019, he was at Boise. So he's very familiar with BYU, very good coach.
Right. He is a good coach, but it is not. Game plans are not made by a single coach as a collective. Sure. And so obviously they have there, it looks like, you know, Justin Wood is the interim tight ends coach and Donnie Henderson is the interim. That's the interim defensive backs coach. He's the interim wide receivers coach. They don't even have an interim wide receivers coach. They have just a graduate assistant who is coaching. And so it's tough. And it's not like, obviously they can run the drills and whatever. And you can do those things, but it's, you know, it's the help with game planning. And I know there's probably some, what is that word? I can't think of the word of, you know, where tampering, right, of sorts, where it's, yes, they're on paid leave, but I'm sure they're still watching tape and trying to saying, hey, yeah, this is what we think we should do, whatever. But it's just different when you're not in the room and whatever they're limited by. And so I think part of it is it's all on Zach Hill. That whole offense, everything is dependent on Zach Hill right now. And that's tough to do, right? Because we know like Aaron Roderick and Fessy Satake work closely together to talk about what they need to do in the passing game. That's Zach Hill's worrying about the quarterback. He has to worry about not only of what the scheme is, where normally, you know, you'd have the receivers coach is the one also watching film and being like, here's the weaknesses in the secondary that we should attack. And this is how we should go about it. And then start kind of like managing altogether, right? Like it is a lot. And so I think that's partly why their offense has been pedestrian compared to what people expected. And so I think the hype of Jaden Daniels and then defensively, they had 14 turnovers in four games. And so people have been like, oh my gosh, Arizona State's defense is going to be so good. Seven of those turnovers came in a 70-7 win over U of A in the Territorial Cup. And so it's like, so you had seven turnovers in three games. That's like, you know, that's pretty good.
It's good, but it's not. Yeah.
But also it's like, okay, you have, you know, there's lots of games where it's like, oh, quarterback threw three picks and there was a fumble. And you're like, okay. And then we had one turnover in one game and two turnovers in another game. Like, you know, that's not, it goes from being otherworldly to, oh, they kind of, there was a lot of mistake made. There's a lot of mistakes made in a very shortened, weird football season, right? Like, that's not anything predictive of or indicative of what Arizona State's defense is going to be in 2021.
I think that's all fair. I think that's perfectly reasonable. Here is why I think I'm higher on Jaden Daniels than the average BYU fan. I don't put any weight into his 2020 stats, good or bad. It means nothing to me because they had one of the weirder 2020s in a weird 2020, right? Like they had a game and I can't remember their schedule, but they got canceled because of COVID, I think like 2 or 3 weeks in a row. Then they had another game. Like they had a weird, they almost had two game seasons last year. Like they had a funny setup. And so I put zero weight into last year. And then they have a crazy off season this year with coaches and scandals and all that stuff. Now, all of this is to say that there are plenty of reasons that Arizona State as a team might be bad. There's plenty of distractions, plenty of mess. But Jaden Daniels, as far as Jaden Daniels, the quarterback, all that you can really rely on when evaluating him is his freshman season. Because that's all true. That's really there. And when I watch his freshman season, I watch a guy and he could run for 125 yards in a game. And he also threw for 400 yards in a game against Oregon. And when I see that, I have glimpses of Taysom Hill. He's a different player than Taysom Hill. He's not as big. He's not as physical. I don't think he's even as fast. But when Taysom Hill, not 2013 Taysom Hill, when it looked like he was trying to, like all of his fingers were thumbs when he would throw the ball, but 2014, 2015 for the one game, 2016 when he didn't run as much, that later version of Taysom Hill that could throw the ball. You had to kind of pick your poison, right? Are you going to let Taysom beat you with his legs? Or are you going to make him put it in the air and beat you that way? Well, either way, he proved that he could do over time. He did. And when I see Jaden Daniels, I see a similar mindset. And the thing that scares me the most about Jaden Daniels is he has that mindset, and he is one of the most unselfish big time players that I've ever seen. There are games where he's totally content and he threw the ball like 13 times. Like he's not a guy who's going to go force action. He doesn't have to have the big play. If you're going to give him,
he also takes a lot of sacks. He got sacked 32 times his freshman year.
He does. He takes a lot of sacks, but if you're going to give him 4 yards a play and he's just going to have the check down wide open all game long, he is more than content to throw it to the check down all game long. If you're going to give Arizona State running lanes and the running backs are going to get 4 or 5 yards of carry, he'll hand it off every play and Arizona State will get 4 or 5 yards of carry and he will be perfectly content. He is not a guy that everything has to revolve around him. And so that gives Zach Hill and this offense weapons. So what do you do if you're Elisa Tuiaki, right? On one hand, confusing Jaden Daniels makes sense. He's super accurate, but if you drop coverage in, you take away the ability to throw the ball, okay, I think you can contain the running game with, you know, 3 or 4 down linemen. It's a risk, right? It's a gamble, but you could do that. Or do you bring pressure because he takes a lot of sacks and open it up for very athletic Arizona State wide receivers to get big plays because he can do that too. Or do you just play kind of vanilla, kind of how you did against Arizona State when Gunnar Cruz threw for 300 whatever yards in his like first real game because you were giving him dink and dunk passes, little underneath routes, and a decent running game.
And eventually, you know, the field is going to compress and you can't do it forever.
And Jaden Daniels, he can and will and has proven that he's willing to do any of those. Like there are games that like Taysom Hill maybe is not a great example, but even, you know, games like Zach Wilson, especially 2019 against like Washington, they tried to take away the running game and they made Zach throw it. And when he had to throw it, there were some struggles in 2019. He threw some interceptions. He made some bad reads. There were some problems, right? Like most quarterbacks can't change to just drastically different mindsets. But I think Jaden Daniels can.
And that scares me. I think that Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback on the schedule that BYU will face this year. And I mean, BYU has already beaten Keaton Slovis. Who knows what's going to happen when, you know, in the Coliseum, USC could be a mess. For all we know, it could be Jackson Dart playing that game, right? Could be starting that game.
I hope so.
I hope so too. But the, you think about it and you think of, you know, everything that could happen out of that. And it really is a pick your poison. And that's why he is tough to defend. But at the same time, you know, they didn't play great against SUU, and they won 37-10 against UNLV, but that game was 14-10. And then they scored with 45 seconds left in the third quarter, not before the half, the third quarter. So yeah, basically, so they scored basically three touchdowns and kicked a field goal in the fourth quarter to go from, and had a missed PAT in there to go from 14 points to 38 points. And
that UNLV QB, they made him look great. He looked really good. And I don't think he's very good, but just from like a highlight and moving the chains in the first half, statistically wasn't phenomenal, but the dude just kept moving the chains and making plays in the first half. They couldn't convert it into points.
It was just, he was running. You're saying like he is doing this with his feet. And so this is something where Jaren Hall could potentially do really well. Let me actually look at the box score from there.
The way that Arizona State is defensively is really similar to what Elisa Tuiaki likes to run. Not what we saw from Tuiaki's defense against Utah, but that traditional Tuiaki defense that heavy on coverage, try to beat try to get pressure with one-on-one assignments and winning those battles. That's what Arizona State likes to do. They don't blitz a ton. They'll bring, you know, Merlin Robertson on a blitz occasionally. They'll bring Darian Butler on a blitz, but they don't like to send a ton of pressure. And the running lanes were there for that UNLV quarterback. And I have no idea what his stat line was, but watching that game, every time I
finished up, 6 of 14 for 60 yards, but then he ran for like 85 yards.
Yeah. Every time I looked up, it was like 3rd and 6 and he was running for a first down. Like, it just felt like it was happening all game long, and he wasn't good. Like, that's the difference, is there were some traits that Jaren Hall has in that UNLV quarterback, but he just wasn't good. And he was moving the chains pretty consistently in the first half, especially. And so I'm big on Jaden Daniels. I think he's a problem. I think he's going to be a problem for BYU, but I think this is a game that BYU could and should win.
Yeah, I think it could be. I think ultimately this game will be very similar to the way the first two games played out and score wise. Like, yeah. I don't expect BYU to come out and just be riding this high and, you know, have a 58-0 drubbing of them. And I also don't expect them to come out totally flat. Like, I think the culture is there that there won't be, you know, the letdown, right? Like, riding this high and now we're so distracted by everything. I think the focus is still there. There won't be the letdown. And I'm not really worried, right, about, you know, that. I think it will be another 24-17 type game. And I could see it going either way. Like, there's what's the line at right now? It's like 2.5.
Three and a half now.
So it's moving towards that, but it's, you know, I think it will be a one score game one way or the other.
I like BYU in this game. And I agree. I think it's going to be close.
Another thing too, is I imagine the stadium, there's a few tickets left. So if you're there, if you're in Utah, go to the game. This will be the toughest thing that this team has played in since 2019, right? Like, they had very limited fans, only played 4 games last year. Didn't get a lot of experience. They played 2 home games against bad teams and didn't have, like, you know, it didn't seem like there were a ton. It's not like they were selling out, you know, Sun Devil Stadium and for their 2 home games that they started the season out with. And so the altitude could be a factor. The, you know, the crowd and the environment could be a factor.
Yeah.
Jaren Hall's swagger could be a factor.
the crowd is going to, I'm looking up this Doug Brumfield. He's the quarterback at UNLV. I'm looking up his stats now to verify what I thought I was watching. He ran for 4 first downs and they were all in the first half against Arizona State.
That's what you, that's just what you happen to see.
Yeah. And so like every time he was running the ball, I think he only had, how many carries did he have? He had, he didn't have a ton of carries. 7, 8. I don't know. I can't tell. The way that PFF does their carries is funny, but he ran for 4 first downs. So every time I looked up, he was running for first downs. And I think he ran for a touchdown in there as well. So 4 first downs and a touchdown in his, however many carries he had that game, which is encouraging. If you're a BYU fan looking at a guy like Jaren Hall as your quarterback, I do think that Arizona State is going to make Jaren Hall throw. If there's one thing he has not proven this year, it's that he can consistently connect on deep balls. The deep balls that he's had, with the exception of the touchdown pass to Pau in the first game.
He also, I think Puka Nacua, if there was that mystery jersey grab that Utah got away with, I think Puka would have housed that too.
That's true. And then there was the one that hit Samson in the face mask that, it was a PI, sure, but should have been caught anyways. Yep.
I think it was Samson and Puka were still coming back, and obviously Gunnar Romney was playing through an injury. It's like they're going to be even more healthy and should be playing at a higher level physically than they were the last 2 weeks.
They're going to have to, because Chase Lucas and Jack Jones are two very, very good corners for Arizona State. Two of the best defenders on that team. They're gonna test the BYU wide receivers. I hope that everybody, I mean, presumably they're all more healthy this week than they were last week and they played, but you know, Gunnar played sparingly, right? Like they rotated those guys in a ton so that nobody was really playing that many reps. You still saw Keanu Hill, you still saw Chris Jackson. So it's clear that they're not 100%. They're going to have to be, because Chase Lucas, this is not a game that Chase Lucas and Jack Jones are not guys that I want Keanu Hill to be lined up against.
Right.
I don't think that's a recipe for success. I think it's got to be BYU's best. So you hope that they're healthy, but I'm with you, man. The atmosphere of Lavelle Edwards Stadium, that's such an impact. That is such an impact. And Arizona State has not played a true road game with fans since 2019. It has been a very, very long time. And I wrote about this last week in that series that we did with Steve Bartle over at Ute Zone. And that was one of the questions that I had for Utah fans was, hey, how is your team going to respond to a sellout crowd that they haven't seen, they haven't heard, they haven't played in front of in a long time? And they all dismissed it like it was nothing. But let me tell you, it is so different. And I think it's even more different than people remember.
So not even just in 2019, like we're going back almost 2 full years. So I got their 2019 schedule pulled up. So I'll start at the bottom, right? They had played their bowl game against Florida State, neutral game, not a road game season. They played Arizona at home and beat them. They played Oregon at home. And that's when they kind of shocked and knocked off number 6 Oregon or whatever they were. They played on the road at Oregon State. That doesn't really count as a road game to me. Nobody goes to Oregon State games. They played home against USC. They played at the Rose Bowl against UCLA. That's not really a tough place to play either. October 19th, 2019, they played at Utah. That was the last time that they played in a tough environment. And that was, and if you look at, okay, I'll go down the scores of those games. 20-14 in the bowl game, 24-14 against Arizona, 31-28 against Oregon, they lost 34-35 against Oregon State, they lost 26-31 against USC, they lost 32-42 against UCLA. The last tough road game they played in, they lost 21-3 against Utah.
That UCLA game, just to verify what you're saying, was less than 40,000 people were at that game. The announced attendance was 39,000.
Right. And then they, you know, played, you know, they scored 38 against Wazoo, 24 against Cal, 31 against Colorado. They went on the road to East Lansing, also a tough place to play, only scored 10 points. And then, you know, then they played Sac State and Kent State, and those are basically two FCS teams, right? So they don't, it's, they have not been in a pressure cooker environment very much in this team in a long, long time. And it could be a place where it's, if there, if Jaden Daniels makes one mistake, it could be like where he gets rattled and he's hasn't played in an environment where the crowd will be against him and he has to overcome it. And that is something that could very easily be a huge, huge factor here.
The only time that Michigan State game is the only game that, that Arizona State, Jaden Daniels will have seen more fans than will be at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. Yep. The only time.
And
like, this is a chance that, again, like BYU fans played a huge role. Even Kyle Whittingham, after, you know, days after the game was over, talked about how loud it was at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. This is a chance for BYU fans to really, really flex their loud, passionate muscles and prove that they are a 12th man on the field.
Yep. And so
what did Kalani say? There's two games. There's Arizona State versus BYU, and there's Arizona State versus BYU fans.
Yes.
Like, that's how they have to look at it.
And in that game against Utah, Daniels was 4 for 18, one interception, 3 sacks, passed for 25 yards. And then he also carried the ball 16 times for 35 yards. Oh, but then took out the sack. So he netted 8 yards on 16 carries.
And that was when he had an NFL running back and Eno Benjamin by his side.
Yep.
And guys like Brandon Ayuk to throw the ball to.
So it's, he can get rattled just because, and it's not anything, it's just he, and it's not saying he can't perform in that environment. It's just he's been very, very limited in the tough places to play category.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, he wasn't getting that kind of crowded in his high school. He's never, you know, he has rarely been in those places where you can get in his head and get him rattled. And you know, he may show up, right? Like, it's, this isn't, you know, say that it's impossible, right? Like, we don't know. He could show up and try. He could throw for 500 yards and look like a Heisman winner on Saturday. And mm-hmm. he could, you know, it may have just been, but he hasn't. That is something that can very much be a factor if the fans show up and make it a factor.
I agree. Overall, what do you think? Do you think BYU wins?
I think BYU will win, and I'm going to say the score will be 27-24.
I don't think it's going to be that close. To me, this is the game that the offense connects on some of the things that they haven't connected on. I love the Arizona State defense. It's the more athletic version of what Elisa Tuiaki wants to run. And so I schematically, I think I love it. I think Jaren Hall can get loose. I think Tyler Allgeier has a big game. I love the matchup of BYU.
Will we see Hinkley Ropati? I want to see his legs, right? Like, I just want to say, do they look as big in TV as they did in those like promo pictures
I think at some point they have to. Allgeier and Lapini are taking a beating. You've got to get a third guy in to just take 5 carries, you know, take 5 hits away from Allgeier. Like, that's got to happen at some point. I don't know if it happens this week. I am very confident you see him against USF.
Yeah.
I think that this is the game that Puka pulls down that deep ball. This is the game that Tyler Allgeier breaks that last tackle. This is the game that Jaren Hall doesn't step out of bounds on his way to the end zone. This is the game that all of those things get put together. And in my, again, I'm a big Jaden Daniels fan. I'm a bigger Lavelle Edwards Stadium fan. That's a really tough place to play when it's rocking, like I think it will be on Saturday. I like BYU like 34-20.
I can get behind that. I am willing to get my hopes up and get behind that.
I think that's what happens. And here's something to remember in honor of Arizona State. Herm Edwards, if you have not seen his introductory press conference at Arizona State, he asks a reporter, you know, where he's from, and he's, oh, I'm so-and-so from Devil's Digest. And Herm said, well, Devil Digest, huh? Well, you gotta watch out for them devils. I'm Catholic. Watch out for them devils. Like, totally oblivious to the fact that the mascot of the team that he is coaching is the Sun Devils. It was very, very strange to me.
I've totally forgot about that. But going back to what we were saying about PJ Fleck, that kind of reminds me of his spiel that he did about Minnesota. So I don't know what it is, but Minnesota has some chant thing. It's like Ski U Ma or whatever.
Yeah.
They do. And he was trying to be like, Minnesota is my dream job. I've always thought it'd be a great place to be. And, you know, coach here in the Big Ten for the maroon and gold, blah, blah, blah. And then I don't remember how he said it, but he like butchered it. And it was another, you're so excited to be here, but you didn't even take the time to look that up, huh?
Yeah, like there were some similarities there. But in light of that introductory press conference when Herm started talking about the devils and how we need to watch out for the devils, I once had a seminary teacher who every day as we were walking out of class, and the lesson itself, like if we wanted to get into, you know, that side of things, was a really good one. But he told us all, Satan hates you. He hates you. Like, he doesn't want you to be happy. He hates you. That was the idea. But he would just say, Satan hates you. BYU is playing the Satans. They are playing the Sun Satans. And if you think that's crazy, ask their head coach, who is in his pressers warning people about the devils and telling people that he is Catholic. You got to watch out for them devils. So remember that as much as Utah fans hated you last week, Satan hates you too. And these Arizona State fans, they have absolutely zero respect for BYU. None. BYU fans should be more pissed off this week. I hope it's louder this week because Arizona State is somehow a road favorite. They are ranked higher than BYU. And if you just scroll through, pick a fan board, pick a message board, pick whatever you want to see. Arizona State fans, you've seen it on the 24/7 board. They are openly mocking the fact that Jaren Hall is not very good. They think that this is a runaway win for them. I saw one comment.
I hope their team feels the same way. So when we show up and punch them in the mouth, it's a big wake-up call for them.
I saw one thing that said, as long as we, Arizona State, are playing at 80% effort, we'll win by 2 scores. Like, this fan base has less respect for BYU than Utah does. And people should be pissed off about that. LES should be absolutely crazy, and it's a whiteout. This is the best jersey combination that BYU has.
It's the royal whiteout, right? Like it's the it's the ice that we wore against Navy whiteout.
Yeah, the Utah State ice.
Yes, and I haven't looked through those messages, but I'm going to go through them now, and that's infuriating.
Well, like there's one whole thread.
80% comment. I almost want to. You know, can we almost want to take screenshots
and send it to Mason Wake. Like he'll get pissed off about it.
Yes. And be like, dude, print this off. Like here, I ordered this. Go pick it up from the print shop in the Wilk because I ordered this and you can go hang it up in the locker room.
There is a thread that it is an Arizona State fan that gets on and says, hey, Jaren Hall is going to be the most athletic quarterback that Arizona State has faced under Herm Edwards. And that's a big statement. They played Justin Herbert, who not only has he got a cannon for an arm, he ran a 4.6 at the combine. Like Justin Herbert's a pretty crazy athlete.
I mean, he's a good athlete, but he ain't cooking the way Jaren Hall was cooking down that sideline.
No. But I mean,
and like Tyler Huntley remains. Could move a little bit, but he didn't like the threat of Jaren's feet. They have not played anybody like that.
And so, I mean, regardless of whether it's an accurate statement or not, it was very much received as a stupid statement. And this guy who seemed like a well-intentioned Arizona State fan that's just like, hey, this kid's good, is being lambasted and just openly mocked. And they have a thread. It has been the number one thread on their message board for the last few days. It's just mocking Jaren Hall the whole time. Like, this is a game the BYU fans should be pissed. BYU should be pissed. They should be fired up. This is not Arizona. This is not Arizona. Like, there's no respect. Arizona State has not played BYU in 20 years, 13 years, however many years, 23 years. Like, it's been a long time. Like, there's nothing there. This isn't Arizona that BYU plays them every 2 or 3 years and they know who you are. Arizona State has no respect. If you just read without the colors, without the names, you just read the comments, you would think that Arizona State fans talking about BYU are Clemson fans talking about BYU. Like, that's how little respect, that's how easy they think this game is going to be.
Now I am revising, knowing this, and I'm going to go find these and we will share these with certain
people. We will blow them way out of proportion for sure.
And we will find the very worst ones and get those in the locker room. And it's the new hashtag this week is going to be hashtag FTSD. And then we will, I'm on board with your 38-21 or 38-20, whatever.
I think this is the game it gets put together because as much, I mean, I don't know. There could be an emotional letdown. I wrote about that today. I honestly don't think so. I think there is more likelihood of an emotional letdown against USF.
USF could be a trap game.
It could be. It could be, especially, I mean, they play Utah State the week after that. It could be. Arizona State, people just need to be fired up. Lavelle Edwards Stadium, we've got a real chance as fans to make a difference in this game. And more than that, every game, right, at Lavelle Edwards Stadium this year, to establish Lavelle Edwards Stadium as what it once was, as a really damn hard place to play.
And the toughest place to play in the Big 12.
Yeah, we've lost that edge. There for a while, blame Independence, blame Bronco, blame whatever you want to blame. Doesn't matter. BYU lost that edge. They started losing at home, but now's the time.
We gotta protect Lavelle's house and get it done. Jeff, this has been a great episode, and I am excited about the game on Saturday, and I think it will be a good test, right? Because we had the week one, Kinks, new quarterback, whatever, got to work it out. The week two, tough rivalry game. Now, like you said, this is kind of the week three, like, show us what you really got. Is it going to click, or were you beat a bad Arizona team?
Fool's gold.
And was it fool's gold because you were hyped against a rival? And
we need a commitment. We need a commitment, Garrett. If BYU wins by double digits, the Arizona State fireside will happen immediately after the game.
Yes.
That's like midnight. That's going to suck.
Yep. We will
do that.
But
if it's a double-digit win, that's what happens.
If it's a double-digit win, we will do the post-game fireside after the win because I think everybody will be hyped. Because I looked through this week. So I looked through SP Plus, looked at it, and it's, you know, if we win on Saturday, the floor for the season becomes 10-3. Because you're looking at a most likely, you know, 9-3 is the most likely record in the regular season. And we're probably going to win the bowl game because we're scheduled to go to the Independence Bowl in Shreveport or whatever it is. And so, you know, and you're looking at, you got 3 wins down. You can say, okay, we should beat USF, should beat Utah State, should beat Idaho State, should beat Georgia Southern. That puts you at 7. Now, the other 5 games of Wazoo, who has looked horrible, Baylor, who has not looked that great, USC, who is a dumpster fire off the field, who knows what we're going to get that last week of the season, Boise State, who's been up and down, Boise State's going to be Boise, and
Virginia could be the best game left on the schedule.
And Virginia could be the best game left on the schedule. So to get to 10 wins, you take care of it. If you beat Arizona State, you take care of business, win 2 out of those 5, and win your bowl game, you're sitting at double-digit back-to-back top 25 finishes. So this is a big game. And if they win by more than 10, we will do the post-game fireside at 12 a.m. in the morning, whatever it is.
Hey, you just got a shout out for Max Hall today, for what it's worth.
Oh, thank you. Also, if you are listening to this, we do have, hopefully our schedules end up lining up, but I did send you the invite. I'm not sure if you saw that.
Yep.
We will be doing a subscriber only bonus episode talking to Max Hall tomorrow on the Thursday morning. So for our VIP listeners, I got to figure out how we're going to send that out. We may have to find a new podcast service that could handle private feeds, or I'll probably just upload the Zoom call on YouTube and then send out a private link or something like that. I'm excited about that.
This is a great state. I'm reading through the statement that Max Hall just released. This is phenomenal stuff. Later on towards the end, he says, "I was hoping you could help me understand your justification for this, as this money benefits you and goes directly into the organization you promote. I propose you do something a little more challenging. I challenge you to step out of your comfort zone and match the funds you're donating to the Make-A-Wish Foundation and donate that same amount to the Agents of Recovery podcast. Through the 501c3 Addict 2 Athlete, the podcast helps support men like you and I. Weekly, I share the microphone with recovering addict and retired undercover police officer Brock Bevel, and recovering addict and therapist Blue Robinson. If you genuinely want to make a difference, or if you genuinely want to make things right and your actions are authentic, put your money and time behind them. Your contribution will help us reach thousands of people who have also found themselves caught in the grip of addiction. You may be unaware that we lose 255 people to drug and addiction and overdose every day. So that shirt demonstrates just how disconnected the population truly is about an epidemic killing 93,331 people alone last year." So he is calling on, hey, donate to a cause that isn't your job.
Yeah, I am going to agree with him on that. And then also we'll have to check with Max, but Utah, there was the picture of him with the Utah fan that was wearing a Max Hall hates me shirt. I think we should have Give Him Hell, Brigham, Max Hall loves me shirts, and anything that we sell with those will go be donated to Agents of Recovery. We'll have to run that by him and see how he feels about that. But I think it would be a great punny thing, you know, a lighthearted thing. And yeah, if you're doing this, go reach out, find a way if you can pitch some money to Agents of Recovery, because it is a big deal. And Max is someone that should be looked up to as someone who didn't quit when he was down. And most people, what happened to him would have ended his life. And now he is, you know, we talked about, like, he did a fireside a few months ago, right? And we talked about it, like, he's back good. He's made things right with his family, with his kids. He's helping other people recover. He's made things right with the church. He's going around doing firesides, and he is everything of the example that you should be of owning your mistakes and moving on and becoming a better person. And he will be the first person to tell you that what he did was wrong. Right. And so good on Max. And I'm excited to get this bonus episode up tomorrow, as that will actually be our first VIP podcast episode. So
yeah, that'll be great.
So Jeff, it has been a great episode. I will talk to you again tomorrow. And until then, give him hell.
Give him hell.